Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I'm your host, DJ. My producer hates me. And tonight we have a very special show lined up for you. We have longtime Sex Talk regulars, Andrew and Tom, back
Hello.
Again.
Hey.
And the delicious, tantalizing, and sexually ambiguous DJ, Concubinatron 2000.
Hi.
And tonight we have a semi-regular feature of the show lined up for you. We are going to be answering our viewer mail, responding to viewer dilemmas, and what's that word? Contrarian?
No. There is a word, contrarian.
Sounds like a cologne.
I don't think that's
concerns,
the word I want.
Concerns, conduits, condescension.
Well, anyway, reader dilemmas, reader problems, reader conundrums.
Or quandaries.
Quandaries, that's another good word. In fact, what I think we should do is instead of going forward with the show, we should just play a round of Balderdash. Or what's that game?
That's never right.
I think we should just have the show instead.
So, Tom and Andrew, thank you so much for coming back. DJ Concubinatron 2000. Love it. And I actually have to say, DJ Concubinatron 2000, tonight I realized for the first time that I am not 100% homosexual because...
Oh, God.
Because you are looking extra fine tonight. I mean, if there was a chance between me and you, I think I would open that revolving door and swing that way.
Well, I've got to ask a question here because she could be looking fine in a couple of ways. There could be the... Woman as C. Thomas Holloway. There could be the powerful, sexually ambiguous way, or there could be the Mae West all woman way. And which way she's looking to you tonight speaks powerfully to your current sexual confusion, I think.
It could be the Aretha Franklin natural woman way. There you go.
Ouch.
She looks nothing like Aretha Franklin, just so you all know.
Actually, I'm glad that you brought that up because I was talking to a friend of mine this weekend about the Rupert Everett Madonna movie. And my question to him was, doesn't it bother you, these stereotypes like in this movie, which is, what's it called?
The Next Best Thing.
The Next Best Thing and Chasing Amy, how it's almost as if, you know, gay people are really heterosexual people just waiting to, you know, get drunk so they can get it on with someone of the opposite sex.
But you know what? There's a chance in that movie that they didn't have sex. Because it's not even his kid. They could have been so drunk and forgot about it and not really had sex.
Are we speaking about some sort of immaculate conception here?
Right.
God came to Madonna.
No, because this couple apparently had sex, but then you find out that the child is not his. She had blood work done, and she knew about it all along. Mm-hmm. It was her ex-boyfriend.
Ah, okay.
So there is a chance that they didn't have sex. They never showed it.
Well,
I haven't seen it, but thanks.
Right, hang on.
It's a destruction right there.
Are you spoiling the whole movie here, or is that just something anybody would know sort of on the way in?
I don't think he's told us about the trip to Mars.
Yeah, Madonna breaks into a big Vogue at the end. It's the conclusion. We don't know about that yet. Yeah. It's good.
So, but I'm excited about our the conundrums that our listeners have brought to us. I didn't even know we had listeners.
Oh, right.
Well, you know, actually, surprising. It was surprising to me. Our number one. We see, we're available on the internet, which you can reach if you have the internet. You can reach our website at sextalk.wrct.org. And our number one listening base is in Belgium right now. I don't in Banff. So what's the capital of Belgium?
Brussels.
Is it?
Good job.
Yeah,
good
right.
Very impressive.
It could be Bruges, but I think it's Brussels.
Belgium?
Do
they even speak English in Belgium?
No, they speak Dutch.
Right, it's Belgium, Pennsylvania. You're just slightly confused. It's about an hour
Well, you've heard of the Pennsylvania Dutch.
They speak Flemish, and which is a dialect of Dutch, and French.
Mm.
It's split roughly half and half.
And so, well, thank you for the question. I believe that what they have is they download the show every night. They have someone who translates it into their native language. And then they have
sort of town campfires where
they have people that reenact the whole show with local actors.
Caning and everything?
I'm sorry, caning?
I heard it's very dramatic. I heard it's very intense.
So I want to say a very special welcome and thank you for listening.
In Flemish?
I don't know about Flemish. DJ Concubinatron with our translator chip might be able to help us out with the French.
No.
So, back to the point. I think the we get voluminous viewer email from all over the world, and if you can send us email email on our website, the number. You can call in. You can write us letters. There's all kinds of ways to contact us. And so we're going to read some samples from your email tonight. And actually, I'm going to challenge our guests, Andrew and Tom and DJ Concubinatron 2000. We're going to present these conundrums, quandaries, and paradoxes to you and have you solve them. Now, DJ Concubinatron 2000, you are actually a professional
sexologist.
And if I understand correctly, you, as a living, you are solving people's problems every day. You're faced with all kinds of people with broken hearts, broken emotional states, and people who are just unhappy, and it's your job, I believe, to make them whole again. And so the first question I have for you is,
it's like Mother Teresa's
how much am I getting paid?
How deep is the well of love that you need to draw from, and will it ever run dry? And second, will I be able to get a little of that hot symbolic patootie before you turn totally ice cold?
Well, the well doesn't have to be deep or wet at all to be able to answer these people's questions.
But it makes it better.
Not to answer questions, really.
That actually brings up another question I had in my mind. Now, as a gay man, I have actually experienced receptive anal intercourse. Is this a tangent? And I find that there's a certain limit to, like, the depth of my partner's thrusting. Like, if he pushes, I mean, it's not the width so much. I can handle a little width action, but there's some point if he pushes too hard, I get sort of a piercing pain like you would not believe.
Oh, I believe it.
That is totally a tangent. completely.
I think he's telling us that he's a broken man and who needs to be made whole again.
He's been completely ripped to shreds.
And so my question is, do women have the same, will the women in the sort of studio respond, do the women have the same kind of capacity issues? Like, is it possible to have a small vagina? Or have you ever personally had this problem? And, you know, people who are traditionally small-statured people, I was wondering if they, you know, perhaps...
I think women have the same problem when it comes to anal intercourse, but you have to remember, you know, babies come out of that opening, and it's a deep well.
Interesting. Well, that's what I was wondering. Like, if someone's penis was sort of pounding against your vulva or whatever.
Cervix.
Would that hurt?
God. Well, when you use the word pounding, it doesn't imply a tickle.
Yeah, it implies like a jackhammer.
Right.
I don't know. If you experience pain during intercourse, it's usually a sign of a sexually transmitted disease. So right. See your doctor.
Public
well,
service
actually, that's so. I think that's. Spice that up a little, would you?
Give him some more vodka.
You're referring to his love life.
I know. I'm kidding.
So the thing I don't understand. No, I mean, there's all kinds of... It's not just necessarily a sexual transmitted disease. I know, for example, I have a friend from college who had chronic pain during intercourse, and the whole, like, cold, you know, medical establishment was like, oh, you're just frigid, you know, why don't you just relax and stop being such a witch? And it turned out that she had, you know, an actual medical condition. She had some problem with... There was sort of some lubrication... problem, and there was some kind of irritation thing, and it was all treated cloning or some kind of medical breakthrough.
Can our technology, like, give men, like, self-lubricating graphite sheets to put over their penises to prevent this sort of problem?
You don't need that.
You don't need that. It comes in bottles.
Eckerd, KY. Yeah. You can buy generic if you're cheap.
Well,
there's no need.
KY liquid's the best.
Even more tellingly, I mean, I think nature provided, you know, before Western society snipped it all away, the foreskin is the very, is nature's perfect graphite lubricating sheath. And if, you know.
Oh, I beg to differ.
I don't even understand that analogy. How does foreskin encourage lubrication when men generally aren't self-lubricated?
Well, it certainly encourages sexually transmitted diseases for
and it's
women.
Just plain disgusting.
See, you're such tools of big media. It disgusts me. The foreskin actually, it adds this whole. We've had uncircumcised people on the show talking about this very issue. It adds this special like intermediate layer, so that there's the vagina, there's the foreskin, and then there's the penis, and they're sliding across each other like, trains passing in the night. And so it's fantastic. It's
nice.
You know, it's a fantastic aid to. To both
lover and lovey.
Thank you. And, you know, all the circumcised men I know of say that they have, you know, they wouldn't all the uncircumcised men I know.
I think it does benefit the men, but I don't understand how a presence or a lack of foreskin affects a woman at all. I mean, maybe that's just...
Doesn't it serve as extra padding in the case of that cervix pounding?
I really can't tell you too much about cervix pounding, actually, yeah, but...
Well, so here's my claim. So the idea here's a little physical diagram here. The idea is that if you have a penis that's uncircumcised, it's like scraping against the vagina at the full speed of the thrust, whereas if you have the foreskin there, it's like pulling out on the outstroke and pushing in on the instroke, and so it's actually the velocity of the vagina-foreskin interface is actually much lower than...
But have you ever noticed the construction of dildos?
Right. When's the last time you saw a dildo with a big flap of foreskin?
Well, they would make them. They would make them. Technology is not there yet. It's actually very...
I mean, everybody knows dildos are manufactured due to the wishes of the military industrial complex and don't reflect the truth.
Okay. My experience in that realm is extremely limited.
Actually, not mine.
Really?
Yeah. Do tell.
Share.
Come on.
I actually had, in my last relationship, we actually purchased...
I have implemented dildos in sexual experiences, but I've never personally owned one.
I've owned one.
Me too.
And I will purchase again.
Now, when you say you've implemented dildos, what do you mean by that? You've used them?
Well, I was for a long time involved in a relationship with somebody who wasn't satisfied by anything less than anal intercourse on a regular basis.
Mm.
But that's something that for me was not only unappealing, but was also very tiring and very routine. So we broke up that monotony by inviting in a third.
Object.
Yeah.
A third.
It served its purpose well.
But were you operating the
I
dildo?
Was the operator.
Interesting.
I was operating. I was at the control panel. I was driving stick. Anyway.
We should remind our listeners that if they have a story about a dildo of their own that they'd like to share with us, they can give us a call at 621-9728. Or if your fingers are tired from gripping said dildo too tightly and you want to save the two keystrokes, 89728.
Can anyone dial 89728 or only those very special people on the Carnegie Mellon campus?
Forgive me. You are all right.
You know, we should get our own sort of three-digit emergency code. You know, like cell phone users dial *9 to get sex talk. I mean, don't do that now because you don't have the code. But I mean,
you might reach some unrelated organization.
And wasn't, like, Domino's going to get, like, a five-digit code that you could type anywhere in the country and it would get you to a Domino's? We should have, like, I mean, we've got international listeners.
You should get an international one because of your Belgian listeners.
Connection, yeah.
Interesting.
Are we going to get those letters? Curious.
I think Andy is, this is not the time to...
Andy's perusing the personals. He's circling with his lipstick.
I mean, is that the key to your success? Is that you're always on all the time, always on the prowl for the next big thing, so to speak?
Well, no, we just had a really lull in this.
That's a question I'd actually be interested in knowing the true answer to. Do you consider yourself always on the prowl, consistently?
I think I'm always prowl.
But do you put yourself on the
meaning
prowl?
Meaning what? Wait. That people are always after you?
I think so.
Interesting.
But where do you fit into it? Do you prowl as much as you are prowled?
It depends on the time of day.
Yes. That's a yes.
Are you two dating?
How often do we get asked that question?
Way too often.
Andy and I had our experiences, and now we are sisters at heart.
Okay.
So for those of you who would like to know the answer to the question before you come on the show, feel free to pick up the Big Book of Sex Talk, now available on Amazon.com. It contains trivia, everything you ever want to know about the show.
Oh. Really? Okay. Interesting. I'll have to pick that up.
Checks made payable to Lance.
I want royalties.
Right. So during... What?
Oh, I have a news flash, just to let everyone know. Okay, the first time I came on the show, I admitted to dating a pre-college student. And just to let you know, the pre-college student was now accepted to this university. So now I have to deal with that person.
So welcome, freshman. Enjoy your stay. Enjoy the next 4 years.
I guess since you're not looking forward to having
him around. He doesn't know I'll be around, so it'll be like a surprise for him.
How can he not know you'll be a reporter? Does he think he was at some other university?
No, because Andy is graduating this year.
Okay.
But I'll still be around. I'll still be around.
Andy will never leave.
Yes.
Ever. He will be a permanent fixture.
So I'm fascinated by the details. So I think I met this little pre-college student. I think I know who you're talking about.
Who knows?
In fact, he's a frequent visitor to my fantasy
chamber.
Life. My fantasy chamber, yes. So I remember you hooked up with him, and at the time,
he's there too.
If this is what I'm thinking about, everything was fine. You were friends. So, like, what went horribly wrong?
I'm sure we're still friends. Just, you know, when you have a portion of your life that you thought you had forgotten, and all of a sudden, poof, there it is.
That's interesting that you used the word poof there, because I actually just this past weekend. I met a young boy who I was, or not young, I met a boy with whom I was discussing the dynamics of homosexual relationships, gay sex, and he has a poof theory that he likes to adhere to, and that is that once he has had sex with someone, likes to make a poof and have that person completely disappear. And so I think Andy is existing within that realm right now, and that there was a poof and the boy disappeared, but all of a sudden the boy's reappearing.
It was more like I disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, hey.
We'll see what happens come August.
That'll be a new show.
Are you always on the prowl?
No.
No. I have an inferiority complex.
I have an inferiority complex. How can I not? I'm friends with Andrew.
So
Tom waits for the
something.
People that are the proud of me to drop off and that he didn't.
Right. I wait for the people to get tired of waiting for Andy, and then generally that's how I make my connections. I'm a sad lot.
So that doesn't require prowling so much as scraping.
I'm not, you know, I don't prowl and I don't scrape. I just kind of sit and wait for things to happen, yeah. I'll sit underneath the tree and wait for the apples to fall. I'm not going to reach.
Still, even though they claim they're not always on the prowl, I should point out that sometimes Andy and Tom serve as last-minute sort of fill-in guests. Where they show up the show with little or no warning at our behest. And each time they do, they look far more fashionable than I've ever aspired to be, which indicates that clearly on a daily basis they're putting something.
Well, that could also be for self-fulfillment.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to look good for other people, but more than anything, you'd like to look good for yourself.
Yeah. That's true.
That's how I feel about it.
Do we have a show position on that attitude?
Well, I'm not really sure. I mean, I have my makeup people and my dressers take care of my wardrobe, and so they make
you
me.
You need a new staff.
Pay them.
Fire them. Sorry, Corey.
You mean DJ?
DJ.
His,
I didn't know Goodwill hired out.
But I can imagine, you know, some people who aren't as self-confident as I am might need the support of clothing or other sort of external accoutrements.
That's not to say that we're totally self-confident.
Of course
that is
not.
So far from the case.
I think, if anything, it might be more of an opposite sort of situation.
Exactly.
You make up for a lack of self-confidence and an increase in care and physical appearance.
Interesting.
So, obviously, Andy and I are very self-conscious, and DJ is very satisfied with himself. Very comfortable.
And I think a lot of people are looking for a kind of comfortable person who knows himself in a relationship.
Margaret Thatcher is.
Thank you.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, no, she's been on the show a few times, too.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell just by looking.
Yeah, pretty much.
So here's what I don't get. And so you know, you have this rule, this sort of poof, you're gone rule, which I, you know, it's not that I'm unaware of that, but don't you think that some of these people, given a chance, might turn out to be someone who you want to revisit?
Yes, but if you move too fast, the mystery leaves.
Right.
And there's, like...
What?
It's like you do everything all at once. It leaves little for the end. It's like opening all your presents before Christmas, and then the day comes, and there's no surprise.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to unload everything all at once. It's a slow trickle-down sort of process.
Which is a horrible, like, stigma of the whole gay relationship, but it's true.
It's very true.
It's very true.
So let me ask you a question, then, as an outsider. Is this whole fear of getting poofed the reason why some of the sexual tension in this room has never been consummated?
We had a moment. moment.
We all had our
there was a total drop silence in the conversation. I personally do not feel any level of sexual tension in the room whatsoever.
Me neither.
My level of sexual tension is very minimal right now.
I took care of mine before I came here, so.
That's my plan for later.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but isn't it not indeed true that if any or all of you were to have sex with me, the host, you would then
go.
I would be on your poof list and you would never come back to the show because
you'd
be too
be on the show.
Uncomfortable.
Right.
Wait, I'm not somebody who subscribes to the why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free theory. So, I'd be back for more.
Really?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Unless it was bad.
Qualify that statement.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
But wait. If the sex, I mean, we have such powerful, sparkling on-show dynamic. And you're saying even if the sex were bad, you wouldn't come back to the show because of the discomfort?
Is that what they're saying?
I think so.
I think that that's a very powerful and very important tool in the gay community.
My penis.
That too.
Given the fact that it
right.
serves its purpose
right.
well.
Cool.
My point being that I think it's very important to be able to not only to be able to have that sexual experience, but then be able to have that level of comfort and to be able to confront people and interact with people afterward. Because if you don't have that ability, you're going to be very awkward. You're going to be put in very uncomfortable, compromising circumstances. So let's say, for the sake of argument, completely hypothetically, that we did have sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I would most definitely come back on the show.
Provided that the sex was good.
Provided that the sex was decent.
Yeah.
Even if the sex wasn't bad, I mean, maybe DJ, my producer hates me, had the flu or something, right?
True.
Or maybe DJ, my producer hates me, just needs a little bit of time to get to know you and what turns you on.
Or a little Viagra.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In other words,
or a lot of
medical
Viagra
help.
Or a better dildo.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to go there.
True, although I should, I mean, DJ, my producer hates me, has been probing both of our male guests what turns them on for.
He hasn't been probing.
There has been absolutely no probing going on whatsoever. Let me just clear that up right now. There's been attempted probing, no actual probing.
What does probity mean?
It means probing. Doesn't it mean propriety? Probity?
Yeah. Probing?
Uprightness.
Get it?
Upstanding behavior. The sort of thing the show has never been accused of.
DJ,
except
my producer hates me, pretends to be very sexually aggressive, but he's very shy.
Yes. When it comes down to it, he
right.
tuck his
you are
tail
all
and
bark
run.
And you are no bite.
Well, but isn't that the beautiful contradiction that
it's a ridiculous
that makes
yeah. contradiction.
It
attractive.
Intrigues you. Come on.
No,
there's absolutely nothing intriguing about it. It's comical.
No. If you were the other way around and provided like shyness, but then at the end you were really aggressive, well,
right.
then that's attractive.
That would be cute.
Maybe there's a third level.
Define
to this. Maybe there's a third level of this where. On the, like, he talks tough, but he seems shy. But then once you get beyond that, he's really a tiger in bed.
A wildcat.
He's the only one who can break that barrier.
But that's true. And he does have a lover.
Oh, which
let's not.
Which we always forget about.
Which we always, which is the inherent paradox of the year. I'll never understand why we have these conversations when he has his level of
look, you're proposing this poof theory, like have sex with somebody once and then they're out of your
that
life
That is
forever.
Not my theory. I was presenting a theory. I didn't say it was my theory. I presented a theory.
And it is practiced.
It is completely practiced. Sleeping with someone, learning their first name, and then never talking to them again. That's generally how it goes. Not in my life, but just an observation.
So if you don't like being a top, Tom, are you a bottom?
I am a top.
He is a top.
You're a top, but well, what's the whole then dildo thing? You said it was tiring.
Because as a top,
I was tired of being a top. Do we need to define these terms for the listening audience?
I mean, even a Marine doesn't want to be on guard 24 hours a day.
Right. It gets tiring, you know. We were talking.
Sometimes it gets boring.
It gets boring. It gets tiring. It gets routine, and that's why introducing the dildo made it an interesting experience.
Sometimes you'd just rather watch MacGyver.
I haven't seen that show in a long time.
Neither have I.
Well, if you do it doggy style, you can both watch.
Perfect.
That's true.
Excellent observation.
Thanks.
So I'd like to remind our listeners the phone numbers are country code 1, area code 412-621-9728.
She's fabulous.
And I don't know about you. Maybe we should read a letter or two of your mail.
I'd love to get
these letters.
I say we've got these minds to pick over. We might as well pick them over.
Right.
And I think DJ Lance should actually read these letters because he's both because, well.
Because he should.
I think you have the better radio voice. The bottom line is.
I think you could read the big words better.
Right.
I'm not so sure that any of that is true. Well, shall I begin?
Please do.
Please.
Dear Sex Talk, in The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, Deepak Chopra has this to say. We're not human beings that have occasional spiritual experiences. It's the other way around. We're spiritual beings that have occasional human experiences.
Oh, that is so true.
Gak.
Right. I think Dr. Chopra is dead on here. I consider myself a very spiritual person, but occasionally I have very human experiences. Just the other day, I was relaxing in the steam room of a local university after a hard workout, and an attractive young freshman walked in. He surreptitiously looked at me, but every time I looked back, he turned away. Finally, I caught his gaze. Hi, he said. I greeted him in return. Sure is hot in here, isn't it? I told him. I told him I thought maybe the thermostat was broken. Maybe it is, he retorted. Maybe it is. We looked at each other nervously. We looked at each other nervously. His ample manhood was making a noticeable tent in his towel. He was clearly attracted to me. But I felt I had to make a choice here. Do I treat him with the dignity and respect that is the birthright of all human beings? Or should I make my move with a purely sexual gambit? I was afraid that if I didn't make my move, I might lose forever the chance of having sex with him. But if I did have sex with him, the chance for a meaningful long-term relationship would be forever unavailable. DJ 2000, I am proud to say that I took the latter choice, but now I'm regretting it. We had a long conversation, but afterwards he just said, bye, nice talking to you, poof. I've never heard from him again. Did
I
do
that editorial comment, or was that actually written there?
It's actually written here. You can.
Wow.
Interesting.
There's a whole.
The whole underground.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm sorry. It was a smudge, actually. But, end goes. I've never heard from again. Did I do the right thing? Signed, steamed in the steam room.
Actually, the real story of that was that he was like, well, should I make my move? And then right as he was about to, like, the undercover police came in and busted out of the shower room.
Busted the shower room, closed down, big report in the paper.
Yeah, big report in the paper. People go to jail.
I think that he should have made his move and had sex. And if a long-term relationship didn't follow, then it was never meant to be at all.
But what kind of moves do you make in that circumstance? I mean, do you just be like,
well,
hey.
That's where you're going to have to
think,
have these
right. Nice think penis. About think about what was written in the letter, what was described.
Mm.
It was basically, it was a B-grade porn movie set up for a sex scene. I mean, it was the next logical step. And if he shied away and walked away from it, then he's only rationalizing his shyness by saying that he made the right moral decision.
Mm.
And I think I'd like to know more about the statistics of both of the people involved.
You mean
age? Description.
I don't think it necessarily matters realistically. I think he probably got shy and then rationalized the fact that he blew a good sexual experience by saying I made a good moral decision.
I mean,
that's my take.
Short of tracking down, sort of hacking into the web TV servers to get this guy's profile, right? We can't uncover more information about him. But second, isn't it the thing to do to play against type and say, okay, it looks like I'm in a porn movie right now, but why don't I step back and, you know, sort of deepen the conversation a little bit and take it beyond the sort of shallow sexual level?
Can I ask a question?
Certainly, go right ahead.
Well, is it always the case that anonymous sex never leads anywhere? I mean, I guess there's totally anonymous sex, and then there's getting to know somebody's first name. I mean, is it possible that it could ever even become a relationship? Because there are plenty of people I know in relationships that started out as one-night stands.
Really?
I had sex with a man who I had known for about 12 hours and wound up living with him for 10 months. It's extremely possible.
Now, is that just because he chained you to the bed and let you leave?
No. I made the... It
that
happened.
Came later.
Right. You know, I mean, if you think about it, there are probably very few people who you're actually extremely compatible with to the extent that you could live with them.
Right.
And the probability that a one-night stand would be that person is slim, but the probability does exist. And in my case, I happen to stumble upon that.
My point exactly.
So I think it is possible to develop something out of a one-night stand that isn't just a one-night stand, but I think most of the time it's not possible. I think the majority of the time a one-night stand is a one-night
stand.
And
why not get that out of the way right off the bat?
That's right. Let them know this is what we're here for.
Well, if you're not sexually compatible, say, you know, we've had these months and months of sex, this months and month-long sexual tension between us. Say it were consummated and say it was awful. Well,
mm-hmm. And you've lost all that time.
Yeah.
Right. It was right. That's why the whole no sex before marriage thing never. Just I mean, in the whole history of it has never made any sense to me, because sexual compatibility, I think it's probably always been an extremely important thing, and I don't understand how waiting until you've actually married a person before having sex is even healthy.
There's a difference between.
I think you can tell if you're sexually compatible with someone before you. Finish it off.
And there's also a difference between having your relationship based on sex and having sex be an important part of your relationship.
Right.
Of course.
You know, it's definitely an important part, but if it's based on sex, it's empty.
It's doomed anyway.
Right, and that's the thing.
Which is why I don't buy the cow and the milk scenario.
And that's why if a relationship starts off with a one-night stand situation, like having sex first of all, then you're faced with the task of changing it from a relationship that's based on sex to a relationship with sex as just an integral part of it.
Mm-hmm. I think to some extent, though, you could say that compatibility is a learned trait. I mean, I'd have to say that in my limited experience, although my first intercourse with somebody may not be great, you can definitely learn how to please somebody. And there's nothing like spending time with somebody to learn what they like and what they don't like. I mean, it's not like if you don't have great sex the first time you have sex that you're not meant for each other, that it'll never work.
Okay. Well, okay. But you preface that with a caveat in your limited experience, and in my maybe more extensive experience, I'd have to say you can have great sex with some people, and it just never gets that great with others.
I agree. I mean, there are levels of sexual compatibility that do exist, and it's true that, you know, basic physical maneuvers, sexual techniques, you can learn over time how to please your partner, a specific partner, and sex between two people might be awkward and uncomfortable the first few times, but there is the possibility that it can become more comfortable, can become good sex, can become an extremely enjoyable experience. But at the same time, there do exist those people. I mean, I've had
but not life-changing.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I've had people who I was determined to have good sex with, no matter what it was going to take, and I would try and try and try. I'd put more effort into that than anything else, and it still wouldn't happen. So I think there are levels.
But
and
my relationships, actually, my long-term relationships, have typically not been with the great sex partners. It's true.
Interesting. So are you saying in the sexual arena it's just sometimes impossible to have your cake and eat it too? Can I ask a somewhat divergent question from the topic at hand about this letter? So much the straight men dream of being in situations like this with women, not with men, where they walk into a steam room and talk about how hot it is, which leads to immediate hot and heavy action. It just doesn't happen very often, right? Straight men are forced to go through the charade of, you know, pretending like they're interested in what the woman has to say, that sort of thing, right? Where it seems like gay men often can just skip the middlemen and go straight to the hot action.
Her vibrator's going on.
there's a cellular. I think it's the president, actually.
I just want to
look. Mm-hmm.
It's her bleeper. It's her bleeper.
So do you think that the fact that with gay men the straight to the action option exists? Do you think that sort of sabotages?
It's just easier.
Well, let me ask you as a straight man: has there ever been a time where you've been in a situation where you can look back and say, that was kind of a porn movie situation? Have you ever been in a similar, not necessarily sitting in a steam room with a woman who's half naked, but have you ever been in a situation where you thought you could hear some lame music playing in the background? And
Not with a woman I just met. With women I've been dating for a little while, yeah. But then again, like, I'm a poor champion of straight men.
Well, let me ask you. You're the only heterosexual male in your vicinity. So let me ask you,
damn straight.
What is the shortest period of time that you have known a woman before actually sleeping with her?
It's been a while, a few weeks.
Wow.
So again, like I said, I'm probably not representative.
A few weeks between meeting someone and actually sleeping with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's really good. And I think that's pretty. I think that's adequately representative of the heterosexual population as opposed to the gay population.
It's not adequately representative of most of my friends, but
I think as a whole,
it's most of the straight people in this room.
Most is a very relative term. We're outweighing here.
The lady is a tramp.
Did we answer that question at all?
I did just have some sort of short follow-up question because I myself found myself in a, a surprisingly similar situation not long ago. What would if the caller, the writer, wanted to go the sexual route? What would have been the next move? What do you do to turn all this sexual innuendo into sexual reality?
It depends on how daring, how daring you are. Like, you could, get it on right there in the steam room if you really wanted to take the chance.
But do you say something, or do you just reach over and grab his penis?
I think it's more of a reach over than anything else.
What?
I think it would be more of a unspoken action.
I think saying, sure is hot in here, isn't it? Is it
right,
a good start?
That is based, if I've ever heard an invitation, that's an invitation.
I think, it depends, were they wearing towels?
But didn't he specify that the boy was pitching a tent?
Oh, yes, he did.
So I think based on those circumstances alone, that was his go-ahead. That was his green light. And if he didn't take it, then he's basically a schmuck.
Yeah. I think maybe removing the towels, seeing the pole of the tent would really, if it was...
Removing the towels?
Yeah. Because honestly...
Removing the other person's towel?
Like, if you removed your towel and the other person removed theirs and they were, tenting up, the pole was, there.
The pole was there, the tent was
gone. No, so the question is, what does the writer do? He has no control over the other guy removing his towel. What does he do to take the next step?
He removes his towel.
And then, displays his erection?
Exactly.
So he has to make an erection.
What about a simple comment like, that towel sure looks uncomfortable?
No, see, that's...
that's corny. That's the point at which I would get up, tighten my towel, and walk out.
Interesting.
But also, if you're in a steam room, sometimes, I don't know, I've been in a steam room where I have tinted up, not because the person sitting next to me is hot, just because it's a steam room, and it's kind of, bomb chicka bomb,
Right.
And you start to think about stuff. So you can't, just because the guy is, standing at attention... doesn't mean that he, wants that person.
I think what it boils down to is that this person who sent in this response has spent way more than an adequate amount of time going over this situation in his head. And realistically, he was in the steam room. He encountered an attractive boy who flirted with him. And that was the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
The experience should have been left at that, basically.
So he should let go. Sort of like if you wrote a letter to Jonathan Taylor Thomas and got an 8x10 glossy, that should be enough. You shouldn't write a follow-up letter asking him for a date.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, maybe Jonathan Taylor Thomas needs friends, too, right?
Now that you mention it, I guess he is sort of lonely. It is lonely.
He's probably a prisoner to his fame and to his roguish good looks.
So can I ask a question based on what we started talking about with, what's that movie called? The Next Best Thing. And it's this was my big revelation for the weekend, that, what this gentleman was saying to me is that, basically that is a very realistic possibility that, the way he phrased it was, well, if your best friend was Madonna, you'd want to do her too.
Pretty much.
And we'll see. And then I thought, interesting then that the stereotypical woman who hangs out with gay men is maybe not attractive or even slender.
That's a totally different subject in itself.
Okay.
But I will...
Wait a second. Wait, I think
they're the same thing.
I need to be able to understand what you're... Are you saying that there's a stereotype that women who tend to spend more time with gay men are unattractive? Is that what you're saying?
Your stereotypical fag hag.
Thank you. That was the word that I just didn't want to...
Your stereotypical fag hag
is a completely...
is not Madonna.
Term.
Let's just leave it at that.
Right.
It's not Madonna.
Madonna is not your typical fag hag.
If I would say that a gay man and their hag, whatever you want to call them, are their best friends. And, to be close to your best friend, to have that closeness, is almost a sexual, thing. I'm not going to say that if I was drunk with ever my best friend who happened to be female, I'm not going to have sex with her. But there is a closeness that you would get with them that you wouldn't have through a regular friend.
Let me say really quickly that I do have a female friend, who is not your typical woman who's only friends with gay men. Mm-hmm. She is female, and she's by far my best friend, in every mental and emotional sense, she is my absolute perfect match. And we interact like a heterosexual male-female couple would normally. Probably a couple that would wind up being together forever, but she's female.
Have you ever had sex with her or been tempted to?
No, and there's never been a temptation. There probably never will be.
And do you think she harbors a secret crush
on
you?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's a complete... I mean, there's absolutely nothing beyond that platonic level of it.
Is she straight?
Yes.
She dated other guys.
She herself is. Right, so I think that that stereotype of women who generally gravitate toward gay men is sometimes kind of...
This sounds more of a Will and Grace situation.
I think it probably is a Will and Grace situation.
Did you watch it tonight? That's pretty good.
I didn't. Too much work.
So, DJ, my producer hates me. What are your female friends like, aside from the sparklingly lovely DJ Concubine Tribe?
Right here.
My female friends are, what kind? Glamorous, talented, sophisticated.
Drag queens.
They want it all.
Non-existent.
Your mother.
And does the fact that they hang out with you something they can't have? Is that what keeps them centered? Is that what keeps them human?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that...
this isn't TV.
I think what I present to them is a challenge and an invitation to try harder, to prove themselves and to become...
To try harder to bring you over to their team or to just try harder in every human aspect.
In every way, just to make themselves...
In a way.
Are you saying that you try to seduce your female friends? You seduce your female friends into a
I think what he's saying is he wants his female friends to try and seduce him so he can watch what they go through in a similar fashion to what he goes through trying to seduce
18-year-old.
Other men, maybe.
And then when it comes down to it, he would turn them down, much like
exactly.
he would with any situation.
Right. There's one more letter I'd like to read before we run out of time.
Certainly.
Dear Sex Duck, some people say that the laws of physics tell us that opposites attract, but I say, what about gravity? The fact is that every particle in the universe is attracted to every other particle in the universe. So I say, why are people so choosy who they will and will not have sex with? If you ask me, this is the ultimate cause of all the wars and suffering in the world. DJ 2000, I'm sure you have sitting right there in the room with you several attractive people. And since you are getting an advanced degree in science, you are probably open-minded enough to have sex with any of them. But they are resisting you. Why? Why is that? Damn it, people. Why can't we all just get along? Signed, give your piece a chance.
Well, what can I say? I think
signed, Desperate and Doherty.
Signed, Doherty Bathroom Attendant. Who wants to try this one first? I know that I have a response lined up.
Well, I think you should just come right out with it. I mean, I know that I present to a lot of people sort of the ultimate sort of sexual challenge, but... But please, I'm interested in your response.
Sexual challenges and like events challenge.
Let's kind of just kind of give the Cliff Notes version of what the writer was asking. Mm-hmm. He was stating that he feels that everybody is attracted to everybody. So why is there such discrimination when it comes to choosing a sexual partner?
Mm-hmm.
I have that correct.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
It's because some people have boundaries.
Well, there are personal standards. There
I'm
are
sure
personal
if, we,
boundaries
if
too.
None of us had relationships and all that stuff, I'm sure we'd be bonking all over the place, you know?
Well, I don't necessarily think that's true, because personal standards kind of eliminate a large percentage of the population. Right. We'll see what happens when we go to the club. But aside from that, could I ask you to reread what it's stated in relation to the DJ?
DJ 2000, I'm sure you have sitting right there in the room with you several attractive people, and since you are getting an advanced degree in science, you are probably open-minded enough to have sex with any of them.
I'm extremely well-educated and have high earning potential.
But they are resisting you. Why? Why is that?
We have already discussed this even in tonight's show. He's all bark and no bite. He has never once made direct...
I offered you $500 on our last time we were here.
There's a difference between the Pathfinder lease.
Right,
how much more direct?
Much like the man in the steam room.
Prostitution and
yeah, much like the man in the steam room. When it comes down to it, you're going to let the boy with the tent walk away.
Right, you're going to take your tent down and walk out of the woods because you can't handle having people live in it.
What if I try to walk out of the woods, but the Blair Witch is confusing me and I can't find my way out of the woods?
Then I'm your Blair Witch.
Ooh.
I'm sensing the show is building some sort of sexual Armageddon.
So are you going to build a little pile of rocks outside my tent of
right.
love?
I might just bind some sticks together right outside your tent.
Yeah, I'm more of a stick guy myself.
And there was actually no sexual connotation in that statement whatsoever.
Well, I disagree with that only because it's the milk thing again.
Yeah.
You don't want just anybody's milk.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that true? But, I mean, it's you know, once in a while milk will go bad, but so long as milk's fresh, it's always yummy and appealing. No?
That's what,
no matter what, milk came from a cow.
You know? I think it's a wonderful analogy because if you're in a situation where you're dying for milk, I mean, oh, you just want milk so bad.
You've been in the desert for 3 days.
You just had a peanut butter sandwich.
Your
milk is parched. And the only milk available is day old, crusty carton, gross milk. You'll take that milk because it's all there is.
I disagree.
No, I disagree too.
I think
I mean, if it's
completely
inspired with things growing in it, then you definitely won't take it.
Forgive me for saying, Sonny, but you know, you don't give me the appearance of anyone who's been lost in the desert without milk for very long.
I have never wanted for milk. I always have a gallon in my fridge.
I think the only people who can speak of being lost in the desert, so to speak, are the host of the show.
DJ, my producer, hates me.
DJ Lance and DJ, my producer, hates me.
But that's
me.
Only because he's too lazy to take his container
back
to the camp.
You're saying there's a 7-Eleven 10 feet away from it, the edge
there
of the desert.
There is a 7-Eleven.
And he just won't get up and watch the 7-Eleven.
There are
7-Elevens
on basically every corner, and he is sitting at home.
Waiting for someone to fill the upside-down bottle in the cage.
Waiting for the 7-Eleven to come to him. But
you know,
he needs to get his feet more.
I think he's harkening back to a simpler era when Natalie-dressed, good-looking young milkmen would bring milk directly to
well,
his door.
People don't deliver milk anymore. Milkmen do not.
His milk has curdled.
Right. Your milk has curdled, and you need to get your own new milk. No one's bringing it to you. It is up to you to search for that new milk.
On that note, we'd like to thank you for listening. Check us out, as always, Tuesdays at 11. Our website is sextalk.diversity.org. This is WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.